This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:07 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Shamila. And you may have heard it's been all over the headlines. A new ordinance has come into effect today, meant to target fake news relating to COVID-19 or the emergency proclamation. It does give sweeping powers to the government, and essentially, media groups, NGOs and even lawyers have said that this new rule will have severe consequences when it comes to press freedom, freedom of speech. So we want to understand it further and get a picture on how it will impact us, essentially.
So the ordinance basically talks about the fact that perpetrators who spread fake news will be facing fairly severe action. And the formats that this fake news can take includes writing, videos, audio recordings, and any other forms that may convey words or ideas. And the courts have been given powers to order the removal of that publication if it is deemed fake news. And if that doesn't work, the court can also order authorities to do so. It also gives the police the powers to arrest and enforce, investigate and inspect in this case. And this includes police being able to conduct searches by being given access to computerized data, including passwords, encryption codes, you know, all of the things that goes into that. And the failure of doing so, will actually leave the person to be liable to a fine that doesn't exceed 100,000 ringgit or imprisonment for up to a year or both.
So on those criticisms, we've heard, for example, from Gerakan Media Merdeka, their primary concern is that these new restrictions were not made by elected MPs through a Dewan Rakyat sitting. As we said right at the top, it is coming through as an ordinance. And the lack of a clear definition of fake news opens room for abuse, and it makes it difficult for the press to perform its duty, right, of checks and balances. We've also heard from the Bar Council saying that some parts of the section do undermine the rule of law and fair trial. I would recommend, although we ran through it as quickly and as much as we could, I would recommend reading through it. If you've not had the chance, I think actually sitting down and looking at what this new ordinance would entail would be helpful, because it covers a lot of ground.
Mm. What's interesting is that it's being framed as a way to deal with COVID-19 fake news. So it's being said that that is the reason why it's being introduced. And the main reason is that there's a lot of false information flying around about COVID. But you're right. When you look at the verbiage that's being used, when you look at the details, it does end up feeling like it's a very wide net, and it can actually be used in multiple scenarios. And that is what has gotten a lot of freedom of speech activists, a lot of journalists, very concerned.
That and the conflation, isn't it, of COVID-19 and the emergency, which are two separate things, but are both covered here. So we want to know if you have questions or thoughts. You can send them our way now. Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we're crossing over to Wachla Naidu, Executive Director of the Centre for Independent Journalism. Wachla, thank you so much for speaking with us. So let's start with this. Under the ordinance, what is considered fake news?
The way the ordinance now has defined it, it includes a wide range of things that could be categorised as fake news, including, you know, information, data, report. And although it says that it's meant to be relating to COVID-19, there is also the added element that it says that it could be related to proclamation of emergency as well. Yeah. And the way it continues to define it further, it could be in multiple different forms, yeah, or features. It could be a visual, audio, or so. What we see actually is a very, very broad statement here, and not very clearly defined either. Because if you look at the form, it could be, you know, a WhatsApp message, or it could be a comment you've made on social media or on any online portal, right? Comment section. Or you may have published a report. You could have come up with a cartoon, a graphic, yeah? And the other thing that we could look into is the types of information, yeah? So what type of information and who determines if these types of information would be considered fake news? So it's all still very, very broad at this point in time. Now, our concerns with regards to the way fake news is being defined and fake news is now being punished, I would say, are at several levels, right? If you look at the first one is on how the determination of whether it's fake news or not will be made. Yeah. Even if we look at the current ordinance and the way it's being phrased, it's still very, very concerning because at the press conference earlier, we heard the Minister of Communications and Multimedia who stated that the intent to spread fake news must be proven before the accused is punished, right? But that's just one part of what's in the law, because it's not just that the intent to cause, you know, must be proven, but if you read section 4 of it, it's any person who by any means with intent to cause or which is likely to cause fear or alarm to the public, yeah? So it's going to be really difficult then to narrow it down, and because it's so difficult to narrow it down, then the application of it could be, you know, rather arbitrary, because now you can have arbitrary investigations. Now it can allow for arbitrary arrest, and on top of that we add a real or rather extreme punitive measures for the alleged offences.
So the argument that we hear often is that we need to have means by which to tackle this issue of fake news and that this is an extension of that. How would you respond to this?
Definitely. I mean, it's so true and it's really important, right? We definitely need to have measures adopted to address the spread of, you know, misinformation, disinformation, especially around COVID, you know, and more so now with the issue of vaccination. There's so many different types and often conflicting information out there. And, you know, the readers are more and more confused on what is real and what is fake. But having a law, as in like dragging somebody out of the home, you know, sending them to the court, punishing them, sending them to jail, you know, it's not the answer. Because what needs to happen is that the government will have to come up with facts or whoever is alleging that particular news or information is fake must come up with facts to counter it. So that's more important, because otherwise you're always going to have this message at the back of us, the readers or people who are accessing the information, that there is something wrong here. Why is the immediate attempt is to shut down any discussion around this? Why aren't we being presented by alternative information, alternative data to counter it? And this is definitely possible. The government can do this, you know, and we, in large extent, we've also done it, right? One, we have sebenarnya.my, where you can cross-check, and it's updated quite regularly too. And then we also have, under the Ministry of Communications and Multimedia, a particular unit that is given a huge budget, it used to be formerly known as JASA, to ensure that public's informed, you know, or public information is spread accordingly. So use this to counter the current misinformation and disinformation around around COVID. The other thing, and this is the large concern, because we already have existing laws. And some of these existing laws, and many, you know, most often than not, we've even criticized it to say that it's very repressive and it's also too often used arbitrarily. Now, even if we look at our law on the Prevention and Control of Infectious Diseases Act, right? There is even a section, section 22 of it, it says that any person who obstructs or impedes or assists in obstructing or impeding any authorized officer in the execution of his duty could be held liable, right? So there are these different laws. We don't need another law. Another law is just too punitive in nature, and it's not addressing the real reason why fake news is being perpetrated, or fake news is being spread at the scale that it is happening now.
We're speaking today with Wachla Naidu, Executive Director of the Center for Independent Journalism. After this, we are going to discuss how this ordinance will impact the media and the public. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Build Fairer Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:19 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. We're now continuing our conversation with Wachla Naidu, Executive Director of the Centre for Independent Journalism, on the ordinance addressing fake news relating to COVID-19 and the declaration of emergency. So, Wachla, how is this going to affect news outlets?
Let's look at the current media landscape. Yeah? Media is already reeling from the crackdowns they've experienced in the last year. There's continuing shrinking of spaces. Yeah, access is still limited to a number of the government's press conferences. Financial sustainability concerns are still continuing, right? And then, of course, we have the recent Malaysia-Kenya decision making them liable for third-party comments. Now, if you add this now on top of already the very limited space and, you know, a space that's impacting the independence and freedom of media, it's going to instill further fear within the different media outlets. It's going to lead more self-censorship. It's going to add on more requirements and regulations that the media will have to be very careful in the way it publishes its news, its information, right? Because if we look at the media's role, it is to facilitate discussion, it's to promote discourse of divergent views. Yeah, now they will have to curtail themselves as the law is so vague in the way it defines fake news, right? So how are we then expecting the media to only publish prevailing narratives or just to publish what the government is sending out as in terms of its messaging? How would that then impact our media independence and freedom? Yeah? So the impact on, you know, just fundamental media freedom in itself is going to be huge, you know, and there isn't necessarily going to be available to media and even the public when, you know, crackdown against media happens, any kinds of checks and balances. Parliament's not convening, right? So where are the necessary checks and balances to counter the impact, not just on news outlets, but the public and all the other stakeholders?
And speaking of the public, how will this impact the person on the street?
I think what is most important is our fundamental human rights to seek, receive and impart information, right? That is a well-recognized human rights principle. And this is now going to be drastically affected because you are going to only be able to receive or listen to prevailing narratives. Yeah, as on you know, public, we would not be able to share our opinions as this could very easily be interpreted to you know, to mean that it's misinformation, disinformation. Yeah. And it can be determined to be fake news because it might be challenging the position that's out there. You know, say, for example, and this is also our concern, right? Because the way our current government's been conflating misinformation, disinformation and malinformation. So if we go by the government's definition last year, when the information department, I think, released the infographics, I think it was in April 2020, on what it appeared was the government's definition of fake news and its negative impact. And what it did was just, you know, literally had this whole list of information that brings down dignity and image of an individual or a reputation of organization. And it's so broad, right? And what it failed to do is to distinguish between information that is false but has no intention to cause harm. Or it's even failed to make the distinction with what is this information, like, you know, is it intentionally being created to create harm to a person or a group? And malinformation, this is the alarming factor. And I think this is what we really need to address, is information that is based on what's happening, but really used to then inflict our harm, or create certain prejudices or biases or harm against persons or organizations, right? And that's with a very clear intention or effort to ignite like different kinds of hatred against particular groups. So the failure of the government to even, you know, distinguish between these different aspects, yeah, if it continues to the way this ordinance is going to be interpreted, then we as public, we are even going to be afraid of sharing any information via WhatsApp. What if, you know, we get information about something and we think it's really relevant to us and we pass it? It could be information that is, you know, old news. Like, for example, we suddenly get this information. Why is there an increase in number of cases of COVID in this particular location? And we forward it as, you know, it could even be a question or comment, right? And that could be even interpreted as fake news if we go by what the government's done in its interpretation through the infographic. Or, you know, like what was said by the minister at the press conference earlier, this just challenging the proclamation of emergencies now can be considered as, challenging it by stating that the parliament's lost its majority could be considered fake news. So there are so many ways that it's going to be impacting us as public, because we are going to also start curtailing the way we express ourselves. But ultimately, we are also not going to be able to receive multiple opinions, information that is going to allow us to make informed decisions.
So there is a specific section that targets people who directly or indirectly provide financial assistance with the knowledge that the money will be used to publish what is deemed as fake news. How would you interpret this?
This is really a very interesting section, right? If you look at it, you know, just look at it and just see how perhaps it might be a useful way of, sort of countering elements where people engage cyber troopers, for example, to propagate certain messages. Say, for example, there's like this cyber army out there who is going to be spreading anti-vaccination rhetoric or messaging, yeah? So at a face of it, it may look like it's going to be necessary to do that. But if you read further, what it could also mean is that donors can be found liable. So in the, say, someone's funding a research or a campaign, and even if one part of it is found to be inaccurate, yeah, and if it's, of course, related to either COVID or the proclamation of an emergency, then that donor could be held liable too. And if you recall, there is also the provision which grants extraterritorial jurisdiction. So what it sends out is a message that you have to even be very careful, you know, in terms of seeing where your money is going, right? As many civil society organizations or NGOs, yeah, we rely quite heavily on donors, you know, on grants to sustain our human rights work. And if this then creates the additional fear on the side of donors or public who are making donations, then, you know, it's also ultimately going to be affecting a large number of people's work.
So what can we do right now to voice our concerns about this?
I think we need to basically exercise our rights under Article 10 of our federal constitution, which is our freedom of expression. Right? We need to be able to do this peacefully. Maybe we need to all go online and voice our objections, right, to the different ministries out there, right, to the Ministry of Communications and Multimedia, right, to the different ministers who are in power now. You know, but the public will really need to act now, right? That's one way. You know, and then we need to also make sure that we push for the parliament to convene. They must convene, right? And there, I think at this point in time, the most important thing we can do is say, you know, and express in ways that are possible and peaceful to ensure that the government's listening to us the right way. It's not the job of civil society organizations or NGOs or even just limited to what media is publishing. But every individual, every rakyat will have to act now, because it is our rights which are being stifled, our freedoms which are being curtailed. And I think it's time that all of us act, you know. And we need to be able to act so that the message gets across to the government. And this in by no means am I calling out everyone to, you know, do anything that would be against specific laws or be considered as non-peaceful. But I think we really need to uphold our rights.
Washla, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Washla Naidu, Executive Director of the Centre for Independent Journalism. We also reached out to Datuk Saifuddin Abdullah, the Minister of Communications and Multimedia, for this piece, but we didn't get a response in time for today's airing. Hopefully we get him on the station soon. In the meantime, we are headed to the 6:30 news.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.